We're going to find out if bisexuality really exists. Or at least we're going to talk about whether or not bisexuality exists.
I don't think
exists.
We're going to solve that riddle on this show, but we'll try.
Hello. Welcome to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm Lisa Thomas.
I'm Jen Siegel.
And I'm your host, Ben Robbins.
This is a show where we discuss everything from weird sex stuff
to online dating
to the challenges
of having kids and raising a family.
By the way, we each have two kids and we probably wouldn't listen to this podcast with them, but that's your call. Listener discretion is advised.
Lisa and Jen met on the first day of graduate school and have been friends ever since. For the last decade, while Lisa was running a sex therapy practice, Jen was raising her kids at home.
And Ben is just a guy who started a podcast because
he didn't want to pay for marriage counseling.
Cheap bastard.
Welcome to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm your host, Ben Robbins. I'm here with Indigo Stray Conger. Hi, Indigo.
Hi.
Thanks for being here. We are sort of following up on a conversation from a few weeks ago. Indigo was here with us on the gay guy in a bisexual marriage. Bisexual guy. How do we put that? Bisexual guy in a straight marriage.
Yeah.
Indigo is our specialist on that show, and we have decided to follow up with that topic, sort of addressing research and some, you know, some ideas that are gaining momentum around the possibility that there's no gay or straight anymore. Or maybe there never was gay or straight. But that there's this sort of spectrum of sexual identity that's not as black and white as we thought it once was. We have an article here, and we won't read this whole thing, but this is from Broadly. Broadly is a Vice channel. It says, Broadly is a website and digital video channel devoted to representing the multiplicity of women's experiences. Through original reporting and documentary film, we provide a sustained focus on the issues that matter most to women. So this is sort of the Women's Issues Vice channel. And the article we're looking at, it's from last November. It's from November 2015. That's about 18 months ago. Title is Straight People Don't Exist, New Research Says.
Yeah, it says a recent study published in the Journal of Personality and Social Psychology undermines long-held beliefs about heteronormative sexual orientation. The study looks at gender expression in women and measures their physiological response viewing a variety of pornographic material. The study found that regardless of how women self-report their sexuality, their bodies respond positively to both hetero and homosexual sex, meaning women's sexuality is complex and not within the bounds of strict hetero or homosexuality.
And this sort of plays on, I think, what most people would agree is the idea that it's more acceptable for women to be bisexual or curious than men, that we sort of accept women's sexuality being fluid or non-binary more easily than we accept that in men.
Yeah, and this article doesn't go into what the study says about men or whether it studies men at all. There was a study similar to this a little further back, which also studied physiological response in both men and women. And it showed that women tended to have a physical response to hetero and homosexual pornographic materials, but that men had a response to either one or the other. Mm. And that study was used to come to a different conclusion, which was that men really can't be bisexual, that they're really one or the other, regardless of what they're saying.
And sadly, every guy listening to this right now wants to believe that other study, right? That's the
yes.
Since we live in this age of selective science, I think we all want to believe that there really is a gay or straight, and that we are not gay, a little bit even.
Yeah, I think that's true for a lot of guys, but that study also really undermined men who did identify as bisexual and was essentially saying that you don't get to be bisexual. And with both of these studies, you know, the little blurb in this article doesn't specify what the physiological response being measured is. But in the initial study, I believe it was genital arousal. And in this study, it's eye dilation. So those are very different physiological arousals to be looking at in terms of making that leap to what does that mean about your sexuality?
Right.
So pupil dilation, if you're having pupil dilation, looking at pornography of any kind, mm-hmm. even animal sex, as you've talked about on this show before, then does that really mean that you're attracted to what's in the film or that you're recognizing that as sexual behavior and finding that exciting in some way?
Or is it just some residual LSD and it has nothing to do with
exactly.
sexual stimulation?
It's from the weekend before.
Yeah, I saw that they were doing dilation. They mentioned somewhere in this article, and I just want to mention this is written by Diane Turgi. I don't like to pretend like we wrote any of this.
No. We
borrowed this article she wrote. But there is mention of genital measurements, but that's sort of invasive. They didn't focus on that for the sake of the study. I'm really interested in what that looks like. But
yeah, well, you can have I believe it's called a plethysmograph, goes inside a woman to measure the blood flow, and it's similar for a guy, goes around the penis to measure the amount of blood flow.
Okay.
But even if that is pretty good in measuring physical arousal, in the sex therapy community, really, really look at physical arousal only as one small part of what is arousing for sex. And certainly that's only one small component of what makes you attracted to another person, not just sexually, but romantically and relationship wise. So it seems like a big leap to say, hey, now we know exactly what your sexuality is because we're measuring a particular physiological
response. And it's
response.
Possible that only my dick is gay, that I'm not totally gay.
Exactly.
It's
got
an
a different
interesting
opinion.
Point. It is, for some reason, I mean, even as I consider myself a fairly open-minded person, but it is a little bit challenging for me to even think that I could be a little bit gay.
Why is
that?
Because
I was raised with such a sort of Catholic binary gay straight upbringing. And not just that, not just that it was one or the other, but that one was really bad and you would go to hell for it, right? That you really were only supposed to be straight. It's an abomination if it's anything but straight. I don't identify with that anymore, and I'm, you know, reading articles like this and questioning it, but I've never had an encounter with a man or had any desire to do that. It's just, I think for men, I think it's the possibility of being gay is pretty scary.
Yes, certainly in our culture. And you mentioned earlier it being more acceptable for women to be more gender fluid or bisexual. I think that comes with a whole host of other issues that it's sexy for women to be bisexual. But are they really accepted for who they are? Or is that something that's just, again, in service of more pornography?
And that's something we've talked about on the show that, especially in the swinging community and with threesomes and group sex, female interaction is welcome, if not encouraged. But there seems to be some homophobia around male interaction in the swinging community, from what I hear.
Yeah, I think that's very true. Because of what you said earlier, that guys who identify more as straight, they feel like if they cross that line, then they've crossed it forever, and it means something about their masculinity. It means something about who they are. I imagine if you had a physical response to seeing gay sex or something that had to do with a man, that you'd feel some conflict around that. Is that true?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think I have made some progress in this realm, ironically, because of Howard Stern, of all people.
Okay.
I remember years ago when I might have been in high school or college, but I remember Howard Stern feeling really strongly that if you were interested in anal sex, it meant you were gay.
Huh.
And I thought that was really such a oversimplification.
Yeah.
And ironically, I've heard some statistic that, you know, a smaller percentage of hetero couples engage in anal sex than gay couples, but there are so many more hetero couples. There's actually more sodomy happening on the straight side than the gay side by a total number.
Well, and I think you're referring to a man having anal sex with a woman, but you can also be in a heterosexual couple and receive anal sex from your female partner with a dildo or something. And I think a lot of guys do have a strong response to that, that would mean that they were gay if they were allowing themselves to be penetrated.
To be penetrated. I certainly don't. I mean, this is a weird thing to admit, but I've wondered sometimes, like, this is sort of Joe Court's thing. Joe Court, we interviewed him. He talked about basically I'm a gay man. If I never suck another dick, I'm still a gay man, because it's not about my physical sexual encounters as much as my identity and the way I think.
I would take that even one step further, though, that again, back to that physical arousal piece, that your sexual identity isn't just based on your physical arousal. Emily Nagoski, I think, talks about in her book, Come As You Are. It's a little bit of a sad story, but she talks about this kid who saw someone basically raping a woman who was passed out drunk at a party. And he had some physical arousal from it. And because of that, he didn't stop it. He didn't do anything about it because he was suddenly feeling so conflicted himself. Now, just because you're physically aroused seeing something, that doesn't mean that you think that it's right. And it certainly doesn't mean that then that's your identity.
Yeah. I think, you know, similarly, maybe there's probably a lot of guys listening to this who have had the experience of looking at porn and maybe being aroused by something that turned out to be a dude. Like, oh, I think there's balls under there. And I couldn't see that initially. And if anyone's gone down the Thai ladyboy rabbit hole, there is really, it really gets cloudy at a certain point about whether or not you're looking at a man or a woman. And if you enjoy anal sex with a woman giving it as a top as a man, would it not feel the same to do that with a man? Where's the gay or straight in those two encounters, if it really is about the physical sensation? Like I said, I'm not comfortable with this stuff myself, but I do question it, and I question the possibility, especially you mentioned sort of a pegging scenario a minute ago, and I'm seeing more of that in the pornography world, and I'm meeting more people, more straight men that are willing to admit an interest in that.
Well, you're kind of missing out if you're a guy and you're not doing some kind of anal play. You have so much ability for sensation through your prostate that it's why miss out on that?
Wise words. Yeah, I think that's interesting. It's gosh, there was a great banner. You know, sometimes you see memes and just pictures going around of like the church sign, you know, with the panel letters that are rearranged. And there was one, and it was like, you know, you can ask God anything, is basically what they were saying. You can ask God anything. And somebody wrote, why is my G-spot up my ass? And it's a really interesting question. If I'm a straight male and I'm not supposed to be penetrated anally, why is that where the magic button is?
Yeah, and I guess if you believe in God and some intelligent design in that, I don't know the answer. We're interesting creatures.
Yeah. Well, this is just to wrap up this article here. There's a, let's see, she says, and I'm sorry, she's actually quoting the man in the study, Savin Williams. We show straight men a picture of a woman masturbating and they respond just like a straight guy. But when you show them a guy masturbating and their eyes dilate a little bit, so we're actually able to show physiologically that all guys are not either gay, straight, or bi. The various parts of Savin Williams' study collectively address sexuality in both men and women, showing that boring ideas such as that people are either 100% straight or gay do not endure under objective scientific scrutiny. Basically, we show straight men a picture of a woman masturbating and they respond just like a straight guy. But then you also show them a guy masturbating and their eyes dilate a little bit. And you're saying, no big deal. That's not a good measure of
sexuality. Well, it's one measure. It's one. But I think you ask a person what really excites them, and you're going to get a lot more interesting and truthful information than physiological arousal, which is just a small piece of it.
Yeah, and like you mentioned a minute ago, I mean, sometimes we can be turned on by something we see that we didn't expect to have that reaction to. And it can depend on a lot of factors, too.
And like you said, I think that's why there's some, because there's more acceptance of bisexual women, or because that's considered sexy, women have that response and they feel the permission to follow it a little more, whereas a guy feels that response and they suddenly get really strong breaks on that. They think, oh, my God, what just happened? Right. I do not want to think that that's sexy.
Right.
I'm not gay. Close the computer. I'm not looking at that.
Yes. You know, and I wish I could think of the specific anecdote, but there's some kind of, you know, bro humor, frat house humor around some kind of challenge where you have to look at gay porn. Have you heard of this?
I have not heard that.
It's like a bunch of guys have to look at gay porn at the same time, and the first one to get an erection is the homo.
All
it's
right.
Like, yeah, it's one of those frat house anecdotes, mm-hmm. but what a horrible position to be put in.
Well, and it really solidifies that fear of it's the worst thing ever if you get turned on by seeing a dude do anything.
Right.
Yeah.
From all the boys who want to live together
right.
under the same roof
yeah.
and get naked together and
yeah.
look at gay porn because they're so afraid of being gay.
Right? Backwards. Yeah.
Okay, I think...
So there's one other piece to this article, which ties into what we were talking about fluidity. She says that even though an individual with an LGBT gender or sexual identity might endure undue social discrimination and prejudice, from the perspective of one's humanity, it may be a privilege to be queer because you've been given cause to question the norms that govern identity in a way heterosexual cisgender individuals may not have. Repressive gender culture might cause material harm to people who fall closer to the queer part of the continuum, but those boundaries limit everybody by disallowing the individual to explore the depth, breadth, and scope of their humanity. And interestingly, then she says that if you look at women, the self-esteem of lesbian women tends to be higher than that of straight women. Maybe it feels like they have more freedom to be who they really are.
Yeah, that's a fascinating, and that very last part really is interesting to me because it's sort of, and I wonder if a lesbian woman would agree with that. It's suggesting that you're somehow, your humanity is somehow more enlightened and you're happier mm-hmm. by not being held to sort of cisgender heteronormative standards.
Yeah, and I think that speaks to how we're moving more towards fluidity in all kinds of aspects of identity and sexuality. And what kind of freedom does that give us, and what kind of problems does that then also create?
Mm-hmm. This also sort of makes me think of, maybe this is back more to the point about measuring dilating eyes by watching masturbation videos. I've heard from women who like to watch lesbian porn, girl-on-girl stuff, but they don't identify even as bisexual. They mm-hmm. they just like watching women enjoy sex.
Mm-hmm.
In that situation, compared to most pornography, you're not going to see a woman enjoying the experience quite as much, genuinely.
Right,
as
yeah.
in a lesbian encounter.
Absolutely.
And that's sort of a similar thing where if I'm mm-hmm. watching a guy jerk off and that turns me on, it might not be because I want to have sex with him so much as I can relate to what he's doing being fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I know quite a few women who get turned on by watching gay porn, two guys. And
yeah.
so what does that say?
What does that say? Non-threatening?
Yeah.
Good decor?
Or just, again, that we get turned on by things that are sex. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what we're attracted
right.
to.
Well, and before we started... before we started recording, you and I were talking a little bit about the bonobo monkeys
mm-hmm.
that are just like the horniest monkeys that negotiate all of their transactions with sex.
Mm-hmm. And they have sex with same gender, different gender.
Yeah, right, right. They are these swinger poly
yes.
monkeys if
yes.
there ever were.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're watching National Geographic and you see monkeys boning and that turns you on, that doesn't make you some kind of deviant. It might just mm-hmm. be that you identify with sex being fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, I think this is a good time to take a break. We're gonna find out if bisexuality really exists. Or at least we're going to talk about whether or not bisexuality exists.
I don't think
exists.
We're going to solve that riddle on this show, but we'll try.
You should probably stay tuned to see if we do solve that riddle. Back in a minute.
Ah. Ooh. Ooh.
Welcome back to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I am your host, Ben Robbins. We are talking about sexuality, bisexuality, gay, straight, binary stuff. I'm joined by Indigo Stray Conger. Hi, Indigo.
Hi.
We teased the break a little bit with figuring out whether or not bisexuality exists. And during the break, we determined that it does. And so we can close the book on that one. We can move on.
Uh-huh. Done.
You have a little bit of a more personal take on this than I do, which I think is perfect for this show. So I'll let you lead this one off. Does bisexuality exist?
Well, I think it does. I identify as bisexual. So mm-hmm. certainly I've been attracted to both genders, if you want to frame it in that way, or all genders. And there is some invisibility within the community. It's a little different for men and for women, and it's a little better now that we have a more fluid LGBT culture. But growing up in, as a sexual being in the 90s, mm-hmm. it was very much not okay to be bisexual and be in the lesbian community. There was an idea of shit or get off the pot. Mm. I don't want to date you, and then you're going to go be with a guy. And as hurtful as it was at mm-hmm. the time to feel disconnected from the community I identified with, mm-hmm. I also got it because, you know, you could go and be with a woman for whatever reason and for however long and then fade back into this heteronormative privilege. And I can understand the anger and hurt from lesbian women who are never going to cross that bridge.
Mm. So you say you did identify with sort of LGBT culture?
Definitely. I mean, I identified more with that than I did with straight culture, okay. for sure. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't say that I was fully accepted. I mean, most of my friends would probably have been more straight or more bisexual. And now, I mean, I wish I could be a fly on the wall of teenagers growing up now in more accepting areas because they identify as queer or pansexual or omnisexual, and it doesn't seem like there's such rigidity. But mm. back then, it seemed like we were carrying that binary of straight culture right with us into the LGBT community. Mm-hmm. And as a result, there was a lot of disenfranchisement. And even now, there's the bi-invisibility of a person who chooses to live a relatively heteronormative life. What does that mean for your sexuality? And that's true for me. I'm married to a guy, and mm-hmm. we have on the surface a very heteronormative, mononormative existence. Mm-hmm. And does my bisexuality go away then? That's tough.
Do you feel, based on your experience, that it's possible to be confidently bisexual, meaning that you're not just afraid to be gay? Because I think that's the assumption lots of times, especially if men claim bisexuality, the assumption is they are probably gay and just afraid to be gay. And they're sort of trying to have it both ways.
I think that assumption gets tossed at men more than it does women because of that hard divide that we talked about, no mm-hmm. pun intended. but for women, I think even though it's more accepted to be confidently bi, mm-hmm. there is also an assumption that you're promiscuous. So it's tough to be confidently bi and say, oh, but I'm actually, I only want to be with one person. I'm looking to get married, that kind of thing.
That's a good point. Bisexual does not mean non-monogamous by default.
Yeah.
Or kinky or promiscuous or anything. It just means preference.
Exactly. And we see that in polyculture and kink culture too, right? That if somebody is kinky, oftentimes it's assumed that they're also polyamorous, and that's not always true at all, and vice versa. That if somebody's mm-hmm. polyamorous, then therefore they must be into really kinky sex too. And sometimes they're not. They like vanilla sex, but they like it with more than one person.
That's funny. You know, I have to just mention an anecdote. I went to a BDSM convention of all things, and it was a really interesting experience. But I sat in on a seminar that was it was a polyamory discussion. It was poly people talking poly stuff. I was probably the only straight, doughy white guy in the room. Actually, I take that back. There was a lot of doughy people at that event. But it was interesting to hear a lot of cynicism and talking about polyagony and sort of the burden of, you know, I heard one guy, and he was talking master-slave relationships. He had three slaves that lived with him. Mm-hmm. They were all monogamous women, and oh my god, that wasn't me, that was the dog. they were all monogamous with him,
right? Mm-hmm.
And not interacting with each other, but all mm-hmm. living under the same roof. Basically, he was saying that he spent more time mitigating arguments than he did having the kind of crazy sex mm-hmm. you would expect to come with that lifestyle. And there were a handful of people in the room that sort of agreed that it was just more complicated in a lot of ways, not necessarily more sex or more kink or more anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just more people.
Yeah. And that could feed into a whole other show about polyamorous relationships or consensual non-monogamy and how it takes a lot of skill and it takes a lot of communication. And there's a lot of mundane day-to-day stuff that goes on that is not about wild, crazy sex with lots of people.
Yeah, there are a lot more hours in a day or in a week than you can fill with crazy sex with multiple people.
Mm-hmm.
And those same house, under the same roof kinds of situations, do you have clients like that?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen people who have multiple partners in their one household?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And time is the biggest thing that folks are in therapy for, because you have unlimited love, but you don't have unlimited time. And you're splitting time between relationships, but then also with the things that you care about in your life and going to work. And if you have kids, your kids and everything else. So time is finite.
That's interesting. So we were, let's see if I can get my train of thought back here. We were talking about you having experienced bisexuality your whole life. Was that something you realized early on?
Yeah, early on I had my first girlfriend. I met her at Girl Scout camp.
Was
a sexy goth, first goth I ever saw, and I knew I was smitten.
You know, when you said the 90s, I wondered if there was a goth grunge component to this.
I was definitely goth. I was the only goth at my school, and I was my friends always said I was such a smiley goth. I was always very cheery. Cheery in my black and eyeliner. And I actually I graduated high school 2 weeks after the Columbine shootings, and I couldn't get out of Colorado fast enough because of the just everything that was going on at that time. So so in a number of ways beyond bisexuality, I was somebody who wasn't afraid to stand alone and be different as the only solo goth around.
Did you ever do the this isn't goth, this is grunge, but did you do the like flannel around the waist with the Doc Martens?
In 6th and 7th grade I did, and we had a vigil for Kurt Cobain. I found a Polaroid of that the other day, so that did feed in there too before the goth stage.
Yeah, I think we can blame this all on the goth stuff.
Yes.
So it is interesting to me to hear that you knew that early on. I've met several people just through Twitter, women who identify as heteroflexible, which is just another one of those in-between spaces.
Yeah.
But I hear women say they like women, they like women's bodies, they like having sex with women, but at the end of the day, they need dick. That's like somehow what they know about it. In describing that they know that they're bisexual, anyhow, it's that they can't do without a man at the end of the day. And I hear that similarly in women who say they like having sex with women, but they want to be in a relationship with a man. They want to come home to a man. And anyhow, those are just interesting measures.
Yeah, I would say that I've heard that the other way too, for sure. That women who enjoy having sex with women more, but they still want to have relationships with guys. And we have some more vernacular for that than we used to, is talking about being a pan-romantic but only heterosexual. So I've seen more and more of that. In fact, I have a client right now who is in a poly relationship. She's married to a guy, and she has a few partners, and she's engaged to one of her partners who's a female partner, and they do not have a sexual relationship.
Really?
But they have a very deeply romantic relationship. She's just crazy in love. And so that can happen. There's so many different configurations that I honestly never would have even thought of as a young bisexual person.
Yeah. Do you wish you had grown up in, you know, 20, 30 years later in this world?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. If that were the one factor, then yes, maybe. Yeah. I think that I would have, because there were times I doubted my own bisexuality, because I think I did have a lot more romantic feelings, and there were sexual feelings for women, but I've never been in love with oral sex, receiving it or giving it to women. And so I thought, well, if I don't want to go down on a woman that much, does that make me then I'm not bisexual? I'm not a real bisexual woman.
Right.
But I enjoyed having other sex with women, and I was very much in love with women. So I think if I had grown up now, that might have been a little more okay. I could have just said I was queer and be done with it.
Is that how that works?
Yeah.
I feel like I'm so lost in the terminology at this point. I don't even know.
Yeah. If you can't, if you're not sure what term you are, you can just say queer, and that's kind of a great gift.
Yeah. Oh, that's good. I like that. I'll keep that in mind. All right. So does bisexuality exist? We were, you were here a few weeks ago. We were talking to James West, who is the bisexual guy in a straight marriage. And, you know, there were some questions around that. He insisted when we put that show up that we call him bisexual and not gay. This idea of mixed orientation relationships, it's sort of a new topic. It's topically new. But I just have to wonder if there were people that were gay in straight marriages since the beginning of time, because that's what you did.
Yeah, absolutely there were. And I think there were always people who wanted different things out of sex, and there are now, except a long time ago, or even not that long ago, it didn't really matter. You were supposed to kind of suck it up and deal with it, and that wasn't what marriage was about. Marriage was a financial arrangement, or marriage was to have a family, or marriage was it was the right thing to do. And now we have this idea, at least in America, of having deep fulfillment in a lifelong way, sexually, romantically, emotionally, with our partner or partners. And if you believe in that, then things start to come to light when you're with a partner for a while, that you have different orientations and or different proclivities. And how are you going to make that work? How are you both going to be fulfilled if one of you is really into bondage, the other person is not? One person really wants to have sex with multiple people, the other one doesn't. All that stuff.
Yeah, well, and maybe we're starting to accept that you don't have to torch the whole relationship because of some of those misalignments.
Yeah.
If your partner is not into bondage and you are, that doesn't necessarily mean it's time to file for divorce.
Exactly.
There are ways to work around that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's maybe where the consensual non-monogamy stuff comes in.
Yeah.
And from what I've seen in my minimal experience with BDSM, there's no sex going on in these bondage scenes in these clubs. It really is just about the physical interaction.
Yeah, and usually there's a sexual component to that, but there's not always sexual fruition in the scene itself. Mm-hmm. And it's also about building then a fantasy world that's then inside you. So whether or not then you have sex later with that partner or a different partner or you're masturbating by yourself, that scene might come back to you.
Right.
But in that moment, it's not about reaching orgasm.
Mm. You know, another thing along those lines is that I've seen people, I've watched a scene where, you know, a guy was flogging a girl and she was really enjoying it. And then you assume they're a couple. You're watching their interaction, assuming they're a couple. And then at the end of the scene, you know, her partner is sitting in a chair over to the side and he comes over and does the aftercare.
Yeah.
And it was, he was not participating in it, but was being supportive of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that a number of times where you don't really know what the relationship is between the people that are beating each other up.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I have heard the phrase before that kinky folks are playing chess and everyone else is playing checkers. And I think that is very true.
I like that.
Kinky folks tend to have higher IQ, actually, than vanilla folks. Mm. Not always true, obviously. But I think that they tend to conceptualize their sexuality with a much broader scope and to have layers of emotion as well as intellect as well as physicality. Whereas plenty of us are just happy to, you know, get it done, have fun.
Yeah, that's a good point. You know, the good old-fashioned missionary in the dark has worked for probably most of the population.
Well, yeah, for most men anyway, but actually a huge amount of women are not able to have orgasm in PV.
Oh, really?
You know, vaginal sex. Yeah, it's like 70-80% or something like that.
Really?
It's huge. Yeah. So without some other kind of clitoral stimulation. So I would say that missionary in the dark has worked for men for a long time and for a few women, but not for every woman.
What's funny about that is that, first of all, it's never worked for me a whole lot, but where did we ever get the idea that was the way we had to have sex? That seems so puritanical. You know, I've heard stories about the conquistadors coming over and having to convert the Aztec who were doing it doggy style because that was too animalistic.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows how that, because you would think that looking at each other face to face would seem more vulnerable in some ways or more intimate. So if you're trying to avoid intimacy because it's dirty and it's bad and it's wrong, in some ways missionary style doesn't seem the most likely option.
Yeah. All that. Eye contact.
All that eye contact.
Gross. All right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll start off with doggy style. Back in a minute. Welcome back to Family Affairs, the podcast guaranteed to save your sex life. I'm your host, Ben Robbins. I'm talking to Indigo Stray Conger. Hi, Indigo.
Hey.
Your name is so hard for me. It's like, I don't know if it's a lot of syllables.
It is.
Indigo Stray Conger. I think it's the G's. That's what does it.
Mm.
Do you say Conger? Do you enunciate the G?
Yes. When you Conger. Say it? Yeah.
Is that your husband's name?
It is. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. It's often mispronounced Conger. I'm not sure really why, but yeah.
I was going to think there's like maybe a lazy Colorado like Conger. Conger.
I've never heard that yet, actually.
All right. Well, we're wrapping up here this discussion about just questioning whether or not sexuality and orientation is black or white? Is everybody either gay or straight? Can you be totally bisexual? Or are you just in denial of something if you're bisexual? We cited a study or two here that have tried to prove one or the other. We've talked to people on this show who think sexuality is totally fluid. I don't know that we've solved any problems, but we've certainly touched on a number of things. We were just talking about natives having doggy style sex before the break. Mm-hmm. I would like to touch on that for just a minute and mention that I've read something about somebody was talking about sort of the fundamental puritanical religious opposition to sex being rooted in our need to be above the animals.
Mm-hmm.
And needing to define ourselves as human and not animal. And that's sort of fundamental to the Bible story that God gave us everything. Mm-hmm. Everything's for man. You know?
Well, certainly the desire to be above the animals or to be above being animalistic seems to tie into our desire for control. And sexuality is where we so often lose control of ourselves. Mm-hmm. We don't get to 100% choose what we are. We don't get to really choose at all what it is that we're attracted to, how much that's shaped by nature, nurture, culture, what we see, what we're exposed to, what we experience is a big question. But one thing is sure, that we don't get to control that. And that can feel scary, which I think is why a lot of people look to their religion or their culture to say, this is what you're supposed to do. This mm-hmm. is how you're supposed to fit in. So mm-hmm. just do this. And that can feel comforting.
And a lot of these you know, in quotes, deviant behaviors that religion has resisted mm-hmm. for so long really are about surrendering to desires mm-hmm. that you can't necessarily explain.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's where we get into some of this stuff about, you know, maybe straight people who enjoy having gay sex but still identify with being straight. It's like there's a component to sexuality that you can't intellectualize. It's just intrinsic.
Well, and even just talking about enjoying sex, which if you're having gay sex, bisexual sex, whatever, mm-hmm. You're obviously having it for enjoyment. You're not having it to propagate the species. And that's another big piece of the spirituality,
right.
that this
right.
idea that we're really only supposed to have sex so that we can put more of God's people on earth is that's not going along with the swinger tagline. So.
That's a good point. That is a really good point. Well, and see, and this is funny because we're the numbers, the difference in the numbers would suggest that there's a lot more heterosexual people breaking the rules than gay people breaking the rules.
Mm-hmm.
With the sodomy analogy, or you mentioned swingers for a minute, and mm-hmm. I thought, yeah, look at all these swingers that are not trying to procreate, that
yeah.
that claim heterosexuality mm-hmm. And homophobia to a certain extent. They're not necessarily doing what they're meant to be, too. I just listened to a Love and Radio episode. This woman was in living in Somalia, talking about she was doing some kind of humanitarian work. She was talking about the expectation that women are either always lactating or pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
You should never be neither of those things unless you're postmenopausal.
Yeah, that's the purpose of a woman. And we've seen that change so radically with the advent of hormonal birth control, which is really just in the last couple generations,
mm-hmm.
that women have so much more control over staving off having babies for a decade or more from when they would in the 50s, 60s. And so now women get to explore their sexuality just for the fun of having sex. And that's dangerous and new to most cultures on Earth, I would say.
It is. And, you know, that is one of the points to come full circle with this Diana Turgi article that we started out with. We read this on the Vice channel broadly. This article makes mention that you know, not only are they believe they're sort of figuring out that it's more nuanced, you know,
mm-hmm.
to summarize it, but that women are more sexual than we thought they were, you know,
yeah.
scientifically.
Mm-hmm.
That we're finding out in these types of studies that maybe women are every bit as sexual as men are, and it's just sort of our culture that has repressed that.
Yeah, and now women, we know that women watch almost as much porn as men do now that they have it on their mobile phones, and they like to have sex as often as men do, oftentimes more often when they do studies with married couples, how frequently men or women want to have sex. But for most of human history, women have been told that sexuality is for the purpose of either procreating or for their husbands, and that it's not something they're even supposed to enjoy. So what a big change now.
You make a really good point, though. How much does, do mobile phones, these pocket computers, these pocket porn machines, how much do those have to do with sort of it being acceptable for women to look at porn? Or to be out about it.
Yeah, I think that's been big for guys, too. But I think guys wanted to watch porn so badly, they didn't mind walking down to their corner shop and checking out the sticky VHS. whereas women weren't quite really willing to cross that bridge, and it wasn't acceptable to do that. But now you can just look at Pornhub and see what it is you like.
And there's so much in there. It's a really good point, though. As you know, a teenager, that was... I remember turning 18 and buying Penthouse, and I still have that Penthouse, but it doesn't get much use these days. There definitely was a time when it would be surprising for me for a woman to go into Barnes & Noble and buy a Penthouse.
Yeah, well, and that's the thing is that pornography was all geared towards men, and it still is largely geared towards men, and not that women can't be turned on by male-centric porn, but now there's a lot more female-empowered porn online to access that has women truly enjoying themselves, not just doing crazy moans.
Yeah, right. Good. Well, I'm glad that we established that women like porn
and
that
sex.
Women like sex and that women and men might like sex with women and men. And you might not necessarily have to choose one or the other. I think that's really the lesson, is that you don't have to choose anymore.
You don't have to choose. You can have your cake and eat it too.
Well said. Thanks for listening, folks. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Family Affairs.
Please subscribe.
Please
subscribe through iTunes and give us a great review.
Or you can go fuck yourself.
The sex therapist recommends that you do go home and fuck yourself.
Links to resources we mentioned in today's show can be found on our website,
smartstudio.media.
While you're there, please follow us on Twitter and Facebook.
You can find me, Lisa Thomas, at Lisa the Sexpert on Twitter or onlinecouch.com.
You can find me, Jen Siegel, at Jen Love Stars on Twitter.
And I'm Dick Scurvy on Twitter. Dick Scurvy. Dick. By the way, if you have any questions or stories to share, please feel free to email us at familyaffairs@smartstudio.media.
The views expressed in this program are those of the participants appearing on the show and not those of Smart Studio or its employees. Come back and see what we talk about next week.
Please tune in next week for another great episode.
See you next week. Bye.